I don't know how much longer we can continue to hurl munitions and explosives at Iran before we get to the bottom of the barrel. I mean, it's sort of like the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Eventually, you reach the point where you can't pull any more out. I think we're going to hit that point somewhere along the line in the industrial base with the missile production line. That's the first thing. Now, as far as what else can be done, ground troops, it is interesting that he didn't address it. Because in recent days, you and I know that he has. He brought up that he was considering seizing Karg Island. Of course, his great friend and supporter, Lindsey Graham, chimed in immediately and said, oh, yes, we've got to do that. That's the key. We've listened to General Wes Clark, whom I normally regard as highly intelligent and thoughtful, come on board and say, yeah, we're going to hit Karg Island. That's the key to success. I haven't seen any evidence that it will make any difference at all, but that's what he's done. And then finally, that great man, General McKenzie, the architect of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, has come on board and said, yes, we should seize Karg Island. We need to stand on Iranian soil and hold it as a bargaining chip. This sort of stuff is just incredible. First of all, what does anybody think is going to happen if we try to move into southern Iran or in the Persian Gulf? They're going to be hit with everything you can imagine from every angle. You've got a country the size of Western Europe, 93 million people, and hundreds of places from which they can launch unmanned things like the Shahad missile, the Shahad drones, or various kinds of theater ballistic missiles, cruise missiles. Those are going to take a terrible toll. If we have people sitting on this real estate, they're sitting ducks. What are they going to do? Are they going to use the island as a lily pad? You know, this is a sort of marine idea for the Pacific. Well, the problem is it doesn't work because a lily pad can be annihilated. But then you go down to Chabahar. That's come up for discussion too. Oh, let's take Chabahar. That's a city. Well, I think the Iranians are a lot like the Russians were when they retreated in front of Napoleon Bonaparte. They destroyed everything. They destroyed everything, leaving nothing for the French. They tried to do the same thing in World War II as the Germans advanced into the Soviet Union. The Soviets did, not quite as successful as the Tsar was. But my point is, why would the Iranians sit there and say, okay, fine, let's bargain now. You're sitting on top of Chabahar. And then finally, there's once you've gotten somebody there, assuming they survive, what are they going to do? You know, where's this great ground force? How do you get somewhere? Oh, we're going to climb into V-22s and helicopters. Well, I'm sure that'll work very well. What did we see in Isfahan? We saw a very vulnerable special aircraft shot to pieces. Come on, this is different. This is a real war. Either fish or cut bait. And he doesn't want to cut bait. He keeps hooking up new worms to the hook and throwing them overboard, thinking that eventually the fish is going to give up. It's not going to happen.
It's not. But and so if he's not going to do that, if he's not going to do the ground stuff, because from all accounts, from some folks that we've talked to in the administration, that issue at Isfahan just spooked Trump and confirmed to him that it's a bad idea to do anything on the ground. So probably even Karg Island is not going to happen. However, he is thinking, maybe I can try something different. It's okay if it didn't work to try to bomb all those granite mountains and trying to get these missile cities. That didn't work. How's about we instead shift over and have a new target set and really hurt Iran, and that'll make them come to the table by taking out their energy infrastructure.
Are you considering hitting energy targets or other locations inside of Iran?
I'll save the energy targets for last, but ultimately we'll hit energy targets, yeah. But we're going to hit them very hard tonight. We're going to hit them very hard tomorrow night. We're going to hit them very hard the night after. And then next week, it gets really bad for them because next week comes the power plants. Next week comes the bridges. We're going to knock out all their power plants. We're going to knock out all their bridges unless they get to the table and negotiate.
First of all, what would happen in Iran if he hits those targets? What will Iran do in retaliation?
Well, Dan, we need to face the reality that this is effectively what General Keane and others like him have argued for. That is, finish the job. Finish the job amounts ultimately into a relapse into barbarism, a descent into the Middle Ages. It means bringing your enemy to his or her knees. That's really what they're saying. In order to do that, in their minds, you're going to have to destroy everything. Most important, not just the petroleum infrastructure, you're going to have to destroy the desalination plants. That's how you bring the country in their minds to its knees. Why is this not likely to work? Well, first of all, I think the Iranians are quite prepared to sustain the damage that he's threatening. They have found ways around it in the past. There are other ways to export petroleum. And they'll do it, and those products. Secondly, while this goes on, and President Trump is sort of soothing his ego and postponing the inevitable admission of defeat, which has to happen for this to end, frankly, he's got to say, look, this hasn't worked. We've got to disengage. He doesn't want to do that. His ego won't permit him to do such a thing. That means the rest of the world looks at this and says, we're screwed. You know, we're headed into a global depression, and that's where we're going. You know, when you look at fertilizer and the 40-50% increase in the cost of it, it's not just the cost, it's the availability. The nitrogen that is vital and essential, the helium that you absolutely need for the production of microcircuitry, all of these things fall into the same categories. This is a catastrophe, and it's being brought on not by Iran, contrary to what we think. It's being brought on by us in our unconditional allegiance to Israel, because it is ultimately Israel that demands the destruction of Iran. We have no particular reason why we should destroy the Iranian state or murder most of its population. That's not what we're about, but that's what it's become. That's what you're describing. And that's why it's a relapse into barbarism. Now, what will the Iranians do? Well, what would you do? I would fight back with everything at my disposal. And I would punish, absolutely annihilate everything and anyone who stands with us. So if you're living in Kuwait or Bahrain or Qatar or the United Arab Emirates, or for that matter, even Saudi Arabia, I would get ready. Because if you think you're going to escape the consequences of Trump's war and Israel's demand for Iran's destruction, you will not. And the elites that are ruling in those countries will be swept out of power. They've already reached out to Jordan, and I'm sure that they have thousands of weapons and missiles remaining that they will ultimately use against Israel. And there's not a great deal we can do. We cannot shut that down. And we've talked about this before. Our technology, as Ted Postol and others have pointed out, has not reached the point where we can reliably protect any of these places. The smart move, the intelligent move, is to recognize the limits of our power, to recognize the futility and say, that's enough, no more. We wish you well, Israel, but we cannot go on with this campaign. But I don't see that happening anytime soon. Do you?
I don't. But what I do see coming is, and Iran has been signaling some of the things they're going to do, in addition to the things you just mentioned about hitting those kinds of targets, same kind of targets that Trump said he would hit on Iran, they would impose upon our allies. Pardon me, but there's some additional stuff here. This so-called triangle of economic death here, that if Iran does more than just shut down the Strait of Hormuz, because now that they've also shut down Fajir, so that's actually added additional strain onto the oil supply right now. But they also said, along with Ansar al-Islam, the Houthis, that they could shut down the Bab al-Mandab at the southern end of the Red Sea and could potentially gum up the works even in the Suez Canal with some of the Houthi missiles. You shut down those three things right there as a result, as a response to what President Trump was doing there. And I mean, how could anything except for, I mean, a near-term recession start and possibly even a depression in the not-too-distant future? I mean, those things, that's got to get the attention of other people around the world that don't want anything to do with this war, doesn't it?
Well, there isn't anybody else out there that wants anything to do with this war. That's what we need to understand. The Chinese, Russians, the Indians, all of these people are disinterested in this war. They want it to end. We're the only ones that are talking about war. When you go to Asia, we go to these conferences. You know, Hegseth was just over there and talked about China. Everybody in the audience is looking at him like this man's lost his mind. They're not interested in going to war with China. Neither are the Koreans or the Japanese or anybody else. And now that we've demonstrated that we can't protect anybody because we just don't have the technology to do it, the question is going to be, why are we still in Korea? Why are we still in Japan? We can't protect anybody. If we can't protect somebody, then we're a magnet for trouble. We're a catalyst for conflict. And the sad part is that President Trump instinctively understood this during his first term. And he was thinking in the right terms. But, you know, if you don't have a foundation of knowledge and understanding, you could be talked out of things that make sense in favor of things that don't. There's nothing firm that you can base your decision making on. And I think that's his biggest problem. So right now he is bullying his way forward, hoping that something will happen, something will break. The idea that Suez could be shut down is not a new one. And frankly speaking, even though it's still useful to the states that like Saudi Arabia and others, it's not what it was because of the Houthi operation. I was reading the other day, because I've had to understand the oil industry, and people that have looked at this industry since these things began have said the same thing. None of it has ever recovered. It's not just the Strait of Hormuz. It's access to the Red Sea. It's access and movement through the Suez. All of these places are suffering. What you're doing is you're taking a patient that's already on life support, frankly, in a purely fiscal, economic sense, and you're killing them. You're disconnecting them. And you're putting at least a billion people or more on this planet at great risk. You're making famine inevitable. You're stopping the delivery of food. Everything that you can think of that is bad is inevitably coming about because of this stupidity of making war against Iran on behalf of Israel. That's it. And it needs to stop. The sooner it stops, the better off we will all be. Our world is not going to end, and armies of Islamist radicals are not going to march into the United States. Well, we've got some already that are here. They didn't have to invade. We let them in. But the point is that this sort of ridiculous notion that the world will end if we stop this is wrong.
You know, it's more than that even. You know, what you said was the moral issue that should greatly animate us, that if we continue on with the path that President Trump just laid out there, which especially what he said, and it sounded kind of like he has a plan for this to escalate next week into the kinds of targets that will spawn those kind of retaliatory attacks. If you only cared about humanity and just as a normal person, you'd like, all right, well, that's stupid. Let's don't do that because people could die. So President Trump doesn't seem to really be animated or motivated by what may happen to anyone else, but he does animate himself by what happens here because of the political consequences. Let's take a look at something else that does matter. You mentioned this a minute ago with the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. This is as of, I think, the 3rd of July. So this is almost 2 weeks old. But you see that even now that it's been completely closed, so it's worse than this now. This is the worst, the lowest our stocks of the SPR has been since 1983. May 20th, to be specific. It is now at this, as of the 3rd, it was 319,000 barrels, and the lowest it had ever been was from its almost in its inception, was back in 1983. And now then, we're almost certainly even further below that. And with the strait now cut off, and if you add anything else, that those numbers are only going to go up higher. What are the ramifications domestically for this?
Well, short term, they're catastrophic. People are not going to simply see prices rise at the gas tank. Everything is going to be more expensive because we understand that petroleum figures prominently in everything that we live on in the modern civilization. You know, it fuels your trucks. It enables packaging, plastics. I mean, we could go on and on, Dan, so we know that's catastrophic. I think the question is, have we stopped exporting all crude? Have we stopped exporting any refined products like gasoline or diesel? I don't know. I need to check on that. We really need to know that. I think if we haven't, we will. And we have exported a great deal to Japan as well as to Great Britain. You know, Great Britain is in terrible shape right now. And the fools in the British government have prohibited any more exploration and drilling in the North Sea, even though they know right off the coast of Scotland they've got huge quantities of oil there. This should have been exploited a long time ago. They did not believe in building a cushion. There was no sense of the need to guard against insecurity that erupts in a way that's unanticipated. So it's not just us. It's also Europe and especially Great Britain. Germany is very close to the bottom. France is not far behind, except the French at least have had the good sense to maintain their nuclear capability, and that's helped a great deal. But I think we're going to see a lot of upheaval, particularly in Western Europe, as all of this, all of the things that you and I are describing begin to have an impact. And of course, there sit the Russians. They're happy to do business, but they sure as hell are not going to do business with people that continue to arm the Ukrainians. And essentially, when we say Ukrainians, that's a misnomer. How many troops do the Ukrainians really have in the field? You know, the latest casualty figures that I've seen are just disastrous. Every time they put something into the field, the Russians kill it. It's like a giant lawnmower that's sort of moving across. And every day it goes further and further and further and further. Pretty soon they're going to run out of gas, or rather grass, to mow. And I think that's what's happening in Ukraine. Nobody seems to be concerned about that. That would help a lot if we ended that. But no one wants to do it.
No, that there's a lot of implications for that. These two things definitely have a lot of continuity between the two of them, which all have negative pressure on our future economic aspects. I'm going to get to that Ukraine part in here in a second. But one last thing I want to look at that may also animate President Trump is the domestic situation because of his political outcome. There's one other part, and that's his physical life. He posted last week at Truth Social, said, "I have given instructions that if I'm assassinated, 1,000 missiles will rain down on Iran and will destroy all this stuff. It is a will wipe out their nation and all this kind of thing. If anything happens to me, I've already left instructions. They're going to do that." And then today, this is just today now, some of his concerns, some of his concerns may be valid because there is a growing anger inside of Iran demanding retribution from their leaders. This one here, one of the Ayatollahs was quoted in the Fars News Agency saying the killers of the martyred imam no longer should feel secure. Based on recent messaging of the supreme leader of the revolution, the demand for revenge and retribution for the blood of the martyred imam and other martyrs of the two recent is absolute. And then here on the Mojtaba Khamenei's social media account itself, he said the red flags of vengeance shall not be lowered. Moments from the people's attendance of the memorial ceremony for the martyr leader held on behalf of Sayyid Mojtaba Khamenei, the leader of the Republic Revolution. So now he's saying, yeah, the vengeance won't be lowered down. Should Trump be worried?
Dan, this is frustrating for me because remember when we were in the Gulf, there was this exchange between General Freddie Franks, who was the 7th Corps commander, and he was speaking to, I think, three or four non-commissioned officers. One was a staff sergeant, and he was whining on, "I just don't want to see anybody die. I don't want anything bad to happen." Finally, this sergeant, disgusted with what he was hearing, and rightly so, said, "You know, General, we knew the job was dangerous when we took it. And I hate to be blunt about this, but if you are going to be Commander-in-Chief of the United States Armed Forces, yes, your life is at risk. It's always at risk. Get used to it. That's part of the deal," as he would say. So I don't know what the excitement is over his potential demise, but if he lives or dies, that is not supposed to decisively shape the future of the United States. He just happens to be president at the moment. We need to stop this discussion completely. And anybody who stands up and says, "Well, if we find any connection between the people that killed the president, if such a thing should happen, we'll go ahead and destroy wherever they're from," well, that's absurd. That's complete nonsense. And it leads you into stupid acts. The dumbest one that springs immediately to mind was the assassination of the Archduke of Austria, the crown prince, frankly, who was going to replace the Austrian emperor. You didn't have to invade Serbia. Invading Serbia wasn't going to change anything. It certainly wasn't going to bring anybody back to life. And punishing an entire population wasn't going to endear you to them. It's just stupid. We need to get out of this. And Trump is out of touch with reality. I don't think that's news for anybody. I think it very much is. And quite frankly, his ego has reached new levels of irrationality. So I'm very uncomfortable talking about that. I think we ought to shut up about it. And we ought to understand that people right now are very emotional in Iran. And that's understanding. and we're going to hear these kinds of things. But we've got to get out of the business of figuring out how to sustain hatred, how to sustain violence, how to extend violence, and look at what we can do to bring an end to it. How do we stop it? Because if this continues on the current path, eventually others will be drawn in. And everybody says, well, Doug, explain how that happens. Well, I don't actually know. I can't say with absolute certainty what would bring in other great powers, but it would be a serious mistake to think that everyone will ultimately sit by and do nothing in perpetuity. Let's not tempt fate. So anyway, I'm sorry to get on my soapbox, but I find this really distasteful, this kind of nonsense.
You know, I don't try to talk you into buying gold or tell you how to run your stock portfolio, but there is a way you can help us. Subscribe, hit that like button, and share this with somebody you love.